Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take a spin.
With shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Ooh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life in New York City.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. And we are your drama podcast hosts.
For those of you who don't know us, and why would you? We are just two Ohio boys who are taking a juicy bite of the Big Apple. We're also twins and roommates and best friends and honestly sound extremely similar, so kudos to you if you can figure out who's who by the end of this episode.
And Connor and I are going to be bringing you drama.
Yes.
What that means is we are your resident dramatics, taking this long-utilized catchphrase of ours. All of our friends know that this is our usual response to any tweet they send us, life update, anything. We'll just say, drama. And we are going to be putting our drama where our mouths are and having weekly convos with all of your Broadway faves.
Our goal is to heighten and expand your horizons when it comes to entertainment, pop culture, and primarily theater through this intimate, cozy medium.
So we both work in creative yet more behind-the-scenes roles within the theatrical community. So we're going to be giving you this inside look at the high drama of this special town.
And honestly, we have nothing to lose, so why not have a little fun?
Exactly. We're not representing a theatrical press outlet or a website or a theater in general. We're just talking about drama.
We're going to be digging our heels into Broadway, off-Broadway, national tours, music, TV, film, major award shows, and honestly, anything possible.
As dramatics, we just feel like the market is missing a laid-back, casual, no-holds-barred medium for people to just talk in this business. There's no red tape for us to tiptoe around, so we hope this is a chill and enjoyable place for people to flock to.
And to help us today, we have someone so iconic and brilliant.
So iconic.
We literally cannot believe that she is here to help us launch this.
Yes, our guest today is always working. Currently starring in Seared at MCC, which we saw, our guest has appeared in the original Broadway companies of Good Vibrations, Spring Awakening, In the Heights, First Date, and brought the iconic role of Wednesday Addams to life, honey, in the Addams Family. She won critical acclaim for her turn as Ilsa in the Deaf West Broadway production of Spring Awakening, and also won all of our hearts as the fan favorite diva Anna Vargas on Smash.
Yes, queen.
She's been in A Chorus Line, Hercules in the Park, and you'll also recognize her from her on-screen roles in Trial and Error, Quantico, Younger, Chasing Life, The Mysteries of Laura, Gossip Girl, and the upcoming Netflix series, which is actually now out, as Ms. Crumble, Daybreak. Please welcome to Drama, Krista Rodriguez.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, I'm excited. Drama.
That's right. She knows. She knows.
Catchphrase.
When you're listening to us read your credits, are you like, oh, wow, I did do all of that?
I actually did have that moment. I was like, that's cool. That's cool. I've done a couple cool things.
You've been in this town for a while.
Yeah, 17 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I've been in New York. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. It's like I've officially reached that, like, when I first moved here, I used to go to the Edison Diner. You know, kind of thing. I'm one of those ladies now.
Someone once told me that you're a true New Yorker when, like, your favorite spots have gone away. Yeah, gone away.
That's totally what it is. That's so sad.
I know.
It's so sad.
It is sad.
It's like a metaphor for change in this town.
Oh, though, I know. You know. I have like this old story of how like when I first moved here, the Empire State Building used to turn their lights off at midnight.
Oh.
Because they were trying to save energy. They were conserving energy.
Wow.
So I used to look at the Empire State Building and wait for the lights to go out, and then I would go to sleep. I would like say goodnight to New York City. And now it's all LED lights.
Oh. Yeah. Wow.
That's such like a romantic
New York moment.
I know.
It was so romantic.
Where did you live when you first moved here?
When I first moved here, I actually got to live in the West Village because I went to NYU and they had the dorms there.
Okay.
So I was on Fifth Avenue.
So
which
fun.
Was like, oh my God, I died. I was like, I'm living on Fifth Avenue. And you could, I had like, I could angle my window so that it would face out and reflect the Empire State Building. So that's how I was like, I have a view of the Empire State Building outside of my window. So
that's
I moved
there
in
the
first.
City.
I know.
That's amazing.
I know. I was really lucky. I'll never be able to live back there again.
I know, that's honestly my dream, yeah, to like live in the West Village, yeah, see Sarah Jessica Parker
totally just meandering. Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay, so we're wondering something.
Okay.
Krista.
Yes.
Are you well?
Yes.
You're well.
I'm well.
Oh, yes. I love that. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Things are going great in your life right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's been cool. Like I, it's been really satisfying in this last sort of phase of the year, because a lot of this stuff was sort of being cultivated early on, and then they just started, you know, the crop started popping up, and then they kind of all popped up at the same time. So it was great is that I had like a few months this year to like go on vacation and do passion projects and little things that I wanted to do before I knew it was about to get like super busy. But it's really neat to see like the fruits of what you have planted for a long time. Like things take a long time in this business, so to see them all pop up at once and be like, hey, it's all here, is really rewarding.
I mean, truly at once.
Yeah.
I feel like in the last like 2 months,
yeah,
we've seen you in Hercules in the Park.
Yeah.
You had your solo debut.
My debut at 54.
Debut. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh my God. We'll talk about that
next. Okay.
And then, of course, Seared, which we just yeah. saw recently. Mm-hmm. With, oh my God. All these amazing
and then Daybreak.
Projects. And Daybreak.
Yeah. All at the same time.
Oh my God.
So it kept like getting calls for things and being like, technically it works.
Yeah.
If you're willing to do 3 jobs at once, technically this works. And so we just did it. And I had 2 breakdowns, but other than that, I've done pretty well.
You're still standing.
Yeah.
We have questions, honestly, about all of
yeah,
these
let's
things.
Yeah, let's give it to
but,
you.
But Seared was so
oh, yeah,
incredible.
You saw it.
We
yeah.
loved it.
Thank you.
I was
thanks.
Just very hungry.
I know. It smells great, right?
They should give a warning that's like, eat before.
Eat beforehand.
We didn't.
I know. We wanted to like give a, like, put a food truck outside or something, but we couldn't like figure out the logistics.
Oh my God, that
but
would have been great.
I know.
Marketing.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like these nonprofit theaters mm-hmm. need to have like these. I guess it's because like the character I play in Seared is this like young woman
Emily.
Who comes in mm-hmm. to like shake things up and be like, guys, we can get everything. Yeah. I feel like we need someone in these like theater things. Like, guys, we can be everywhere. Yes. Like, let's
she
do
was
it.
Like, Emily was iconic.
She's iconic.
Her fashion.
So
her fashion's amazing. She's all Zara all the time. But
the
she
heels.
Like puts it together well. Yeah, she's got the great heels. Tilly Grimes is our costume designer, and she's done like a couple shows of my that I've been in, and like she is spot on all the time. But yeah, it's really interesting. The show is really interesting. Like, I'm the only woman in the show, and it's about this, like, basically when you boil it down, like a total nightmare of a man. Mm-hmm. Like, he's sort of like an Anthony Bourdain, like,
yeah.
temperamental chef who is entirely like self-sabotaging himself and the business that him and his best friend are in. But he's like, it's total Walter White complex. Like, mm-hmm. you love him immediately. You're like, I love this nightmare man.
Yes.
And then this sort of like slightly nightmare, but like very competent woman walks in, and it's like, screw you, we hate you, get out of here. And mm-hmm. then like you hope that people leave and go, wait a minute, why did I hate her? Because
okay.
you know,
we talked about this on the walk. We were yeah. like, wait, we should have been rooting for her mm-hmm. the whole time, because mm-hmm. she you were Emily was right. I mean, mm-hmm. no spoilers obviously, but like
Emily's always right.
Emily is incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever been in that scenario before where you're the only woman in a show?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I've been in scenarios where I'm like the only woman in the room, or when the majority does not swing toward women, yeah. obviously.
But it was written by a woman.
But it was written by Teresa yeah. Rebeck. And, you know, people will sometimes say about Teresa's work, they're like, why doesn't she write like female characters who are like the heroes? And it's like, because that's not the reality. Mm. And A, that's not the reality most of the time. B, that's not been her experience. And I think that she writes the best from like, she is a better bulldog than she is like a feminine mm. like, you know, like that's how I want to be, that's how we all want to be. Wow. And like, she's been doing that for years and hitting the wall, and now like we get to see how that all plays out when maybe you let someone like that in charge, you know.
Yes.
And like acknowledge that they are doing exactly what everyone else is doing to get mm-hmm. to where they're going. So that's like another part of it. But also, I don't want to play the hero all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I as a woman, my goals and what I did a couple years ago and sort of refocused my life and my career was to be like, I don't want to be the smartest woman in the room who's always rolling her eyes at the men. I want to get dirty too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And like, that's what has led to Daybreak and Seared and even Hercules in yeah. some degree. Like, and my 54 Below show. Like, all the things that I'm trying to say is, like, I want to get down in the dirt too. Like, I don't want to come out scot-free in anything mm-hmm. either. So I do feel like that's interesting, though, that men tend to get themselves dirty and come off scot-free mm-hmm. easier than women do.
Oh, yes.
So it's interesting. I hope that people are seeing and talking about it like you guys were doing yes. about, like, why it's hard when people aren't. And they're just like, oh, amazing. We have this woman that we get to hate. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't take the extra step that right. is like, you know, I wonder why I hated her.
Yeah.
I had someone in an interview be like, well, we knew Emily was going to be bossy because she was wearing high heels. And I was like, wait, what? I was like, okay, but let's unpack that. Was it a man? Oh, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, but it was just, you know, like, okay, let's unpack why you think that heels means bossy. And also, if I didn't wear heels in the office, what would you think about her then?
Yeah, exactly.
Is she sloppy? Is she not competent? Mm-hmm. Is she not feminine? Like, all the things around it. So anyway, that's my diatribe about Siri.
Wow. I honestly felt like I related to Emily the most out of all the characters. So I didn't walk away hating her.
Yeah.
I thought she was fabulous.
Yeah, she is fabulous. She's fun to play.
I'm sure.
I'm like, I want to be annoying, but I also want to be right.
She's great.
Which is annoying.
She's so great.
Yeah.
And that's running through December, right?
December 1st is okay. We extended until December 1st. So.
Well, I hope everyone gets the chance to see
yeah,
it.
Please come. So good. Yeah.
Okay, so... Before we get too ahead of ourselves with this,
we're going to jump into a question that we're wondering. Mm, so this is kind of the one question we want to ask all of our guests.
Great.
And it's inspired by the musical Fun Home. So in Fun Home, there's a scene in a song called Ring of Keys in which a character has a moment of total identification and clarity. So we want to relate that to a life in the arts. So when it comes to theater, pop culture, entertainment, did you ever have that Ring of Keys moment where you said, you know, this is what I want. This is where I see myself, whether it be professionally or even just out of what you enjoy out of every day.
Yeah, I think that like there are several moments that happens for you, especially when you have your Ring of Keys moment when you're five. It's like you get that moment of like, I know something about this is something I need. And then you have several more where you start to solidify how that actually like makes your life seem. So I was five and my mom got me tickets to see Annie. It's always Annie. Like, I, you guys should take an Annie toll. It's like the Meadowlark of 54 Below toll. Like, take the Annie toll. Like, how many lives has Annie ruined is what I always like to say.
A hard knock life.
Hard knock life. I mean, but just like when you're a kid and you see someone your age, basically, like up there, we were in the second row and we were late, which is a very Kathy Rodriguez thing to do. And so we like had to climb over everybody. We sat in the two center seats in the second row. And she was just like there, this girl and a dog. I mean, please, it's over. And like there were footlights and I was like, whatever this is, I need to be here. So that coupled with the fact that like I did have some natural ability that like led that to be an easier, you know, I think a lot of people can see themselves and be like, I want to be on Broadway, but not be able to do that. So once I sort of realized I had that ability, I was just sort of living life, doing as much as I could and singing in the choirs and like taking the dance lessons and stuff, but didn't really know what that meant.
And Kathy was supportive.
And Kathy was so supportive and my dad, they're so supportive. And they also did not come from that world. So they didn't know how to really like solidify that for me either. They were just supportive in whatever I wanted to do. And I was also playing basketball and doing all these other things, you know? And then, I saw my first Broadway show when I was six. So that was in California when I saw Annie. When I saw Fiddler on the Roof when I was six, my parents and I and my brother lived in a motorhome for a year and we like traveled around the country.
What?
And so we like rolled into New York City like in a motorhome and like went up to the TKTS booth. And this is in like 89, 90. So like theater was the it place to like show off your ruffles and your like, your poofy sleeves and your satin pumps and everything. I was in like jean shorts and a t-shirt. And I remember getting into the theater and getting like so embarrassed and be like, I don't want to go in there. All these girls are wearing beautiful dresses and whatever. So we like went in and then we sat down and then the lights went out. And it didn't matter. Like, I remember even at six being like, it doesn't matter. It's dark in here. Like, no one cares. And then I think, like knowing that now, that experience of that great, great equalizer of mm-hmm. Broadway, of theater, of yeah. like entering into an agreement with everyone in the room that we're all doing this together, regardless of where you come from or how much money you can pay or whatever. So I think that was a big, beautiful moment for me. And then later on, like when I was like 12 or 13, I was in a dance recital and I got in the car with my mom afterwards and I was like, I just love the smell of the theater. I need to be around the smell. There's nowhere else in the world that smells like a theater mm-hmm. smells.
Oh, yeah.
It's that like paint and mold smell.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And like, I still don't know what it is. I mean, I think it is mold, but like, yeah. I remember being like, I just nowhere else. I want to be around that all the time. And then she said in that time, she was like, you know, people do this for a living. And I was like, what? Wow. You've been holding out on me. And from that point on, it was just like, I just, you know, might as well have like kicked the door open. I was like, no one stopped me. This is where I'm going. What has taken me so long to know that this is what I wanted to do? So,
oh my
gosh. Those all come together.
Those are all amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love the idea of this great equalizer.
Yeah.
This theater. That's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And you have so much talent too.
Oh, thanks.
You're such a dynamic performer.
Thank you.
I feel like that really, in your most recent, or I guess your debut.
Yeah, show, my debut show. My debut.
Before Below. Mm-hmm. I was just blown away.
Thank
your
you.
Talent and your ability to capture the audience. Truly. I mean, I still think about, I can talk about this.
Yeah. Right now, yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah.
At the end, when you sang What's Going On.
Uh-huh. Like, yeah. We don't worry, be happy.
Don't worry, be happy.
Mm-hmm.
We were wiping tears.
And we cried.
Amazing.
Out. Yeah. It was,
amazing.
It was beautiful. Yeah. And passionate.
We've seen a lot of debuts.
I'm sure.
And yours
I'm sure.
was so unique.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like, I feel quite lucky. I was supposed to have done the show like 3 or 4 times before mm-hmm. that, but then things went wrong and, or, you know, I got other jobs or I had to move or something. There's always a reason. So I actually felt very lucky that it happened when it happened. Mm-hmm. Like when I had Ben in my life, when I had like the year, because I was supposed to do it last year. And then I had the year to know what I wanted to say. And who I've become in that year, and like, so I feel lucky that got to be it, that I wasn't making the debut at 21 and just like mm-hmm. you know, not knowing exactly what I wanted to say. But also on that end, I don't advocate for like waiting until you're absolutely ready to do mm-hmm. something. Like I could have done 27 other shows before I had this
sure.
show and still come to this show, you know?
Yeah.
So I wish I would have been a bit braver in the past, but I do still feel lucky that I was able to put together what I did.
Oh, it was so good.
I was proud of it.
And we still talk about when you sang My Strongest Suit from
yeah.
Rita.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We'll never yeah. hear that song differently.
That was
so brilliant.
It was so funny. Like I was doing it for another event. I was doing something and Ben and I were like, how funny would that be? And we kind of like joked about it because we're like, what song do we, I didn't want to do like Wind Beneath My Wings when I'm talking about cancer. Like right. I wanted to do something that more represented like what my experience was. And we started playing through it and we were both like mouths dropped. We're like, every lyric of this is what this was. Mm-hmm. Like every single thing. And like, I have pictures that have me in all of these clubs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is so crazy. So it was an exciting moment. That and the Beyonce thing.
Oh,
like
yes.
when the things like click together and you're like, this could be a thing. It's so exciting. And Ben is so good at that stuff. So.
Yeah, and I forgot about Chemo Couture, which I remember following along.
Oh, thanks.
What year was that?
2015 was when it launched.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so seeing those pictures and the way that it all timed up mm-hmm. with, I could.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That was brilliant. Like,
thank you.
You were so great.
And of course, you had some smash in there.
I had some smash in
we
there.
We need to talk about smash.
Give it up. Let's go.
We need to talk about Anna.
Yeah. Anna.
We are smash. Super fans.
Have you watched it like several times or do you?
We regard it in it doesn't need like over and over again.
Yes, sure,
we watched
sure.
it when it aired and then yes. we watched it again.
Yeah. I haven't seen
on.
It since it aired. I don't
wow.
remember most of the things.
Oh my gosh, that's
yeah.
so funny.
My niece is 14 now and she's going to the same arts high school that I went to.
Okay.
And so my parents were like, let's watch it again now that she's old enough
yeah,
to watch
yeah.
it. So they rewatched it in the last like month or so. But I have not.
Did they like mention anything and you were like, wait, what?
Yeah, there was some part like, remember that thing? I'm like, oh yeah. So that's what's so funny.
That's but, yeah, we rewatched yeah. it then a year ago when Connor moved to New York.
Okay.
I was like,
yes.
I'm moving to New York and I'm gonna see
I need
it.
That New York experience.
Oh my God, it was so
yeah.
cool. It
yeah.
was great to watch it again. Honestly, because we watched it first when we were seniors in high school.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then
yeah.
freshman in college, and now like as years have gone by.
And you know the industry now a little bit
oh, yeah,
better.
The faces
and like,
that
yeah,
pop up in
I
that
know.
Show. And I mean
name drops left and right.
The show
yes.
will always be just so wonderful and perfect to me. Like I know it wasn't always realistic,
yeah.
but that's okay.
That's what I always said. Like, granted, if I weren't in it, maybe I would be more on that on that side. But like, I mean, Grey's Anatomy, they're doing surgeries in the dark. Yeah. There is no light in that operating room. Yeah, yeah. Like, how can you possibly look at that and be like, that's completely realistic and not be like, oh, she doesn't have a wig cap on. Who cares?
Right.
Like, you know, I get that those things would be fun and Easter eggs, but the community is very small.
Yes.
Yeah.
And who we need to educate about theater is very large.
Yes.
So like broad strokes sometimes.
Yes.
You know?
I hope we see another show like it. I know that everyone says, like, oh, Smash come back and everything. Yeah. But I wonder when we'll get another look into theater.
Yeah,
like that.
I know. There were two happening at the same time, too, like when Smash was coming out, another one. And Smash itself was supposed to be on Showtime.
Showtime,
that's right.
So it was, you know, I think that there is in this world of like streaming services, we could get something a lot like dirtier. And well, that's not the same thing. So forget it. Move on.
Yeah. Connor, do you have anything specifically you want to ask?
I honestly have so many questions. I don't want to make it all about Smash.
No, yeah.
Had you watched season one before you joined the show in season two?
Yeah, definitely.
I remember watching the season two premiere, which we knew you were when it was coming out. You were just as a new, you know, cast member on the show. But I remember Kat McPhee Foster is singing.
Yes.
She's doing the opening number of season two.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden she's in her apartment and you're there waiting for her. Welcome home.
Yes, welcome home.
Like, oh girl, here we go.
Uh-huh.
Here we go.
Yeah.
And Anna, she really had a great arc through the series because, you know, I do feel like it was an ensemble show, but it was really Karen and Ivy.
Sure, of course.
Really going for what they wanted. But then like this other, you know, similar story about another woman who's really never had her chance to shine.
Right.
Then she gets it.
Right.
And then has it taken away. Her.
Right, right. The more realistic story than the girl from Iowa shows up and gets the lead in the Broadway show the next day. I felt like I was representing a bit more of the like the regular sort of girl pounding the pavement all the time. And the nature of TV and especially network TV is that like a lot of stuff gets cut and so much of it has to be boiled down to like what is the least amount of information we can get from this character because we actually need to see more from these other people, or whatever. So my entrance on my first episode was supposed to be a 3-page scene.
Oh.
About me. I had come off of the West Side Story tour. I had stolen my Rosalia shoes. I had like there was this whole thing about Karen staying with me because, you know, her and Dev broke up and like how we knew each other and how there was like pages and pages of like all of this exposition about how, you know, we had come to be. And then when you see the episode, it's like, where are you going tonight? Oh, I'm going to go see that show starring Jennifer Hudson. Oh, is that the show that's about the woman who blah, blah, blah? Yep. See ya. And it's like my whole job was to like deliver exposition on a tray for other people.
Yeah.
So like it was tricky to feel like the arc was getting sort of seen by people. Mm-hmm. And there was feedback, too, from people being like, who is this girl? Yeah. Like, why does she have who? Like, there was a line I remember like in episode 5 or something. And I'm like, you know, Jimmy, you know, I'm talking about Jeremy. Yeah, I'm like, but you know, Jimmy. And do you know the actress Retta?
She's
from Parks and Recreation. Yeah, literally tweeted, was like, you don't know Jimmy. Who are you, lady? Like, didn't even by episode 5 was still like, how am I supposed to believe that you know who Jimmy is? You know?
Oh yeah. God.
Like,
yeah.
So that sort of thing happens a lot in TV where you're like, I know what we filmed and I know. So you hope it's still getting across to people like who you are. But yeah, I mean, that was supposed to be her sort of lot in life was to always sort of be the bridesmaid and never the bride. Yeah.
So sad.
I know.
And she got her Tony Award snatched.
I know, snatched. I know.
By Mara Davi.
By Mara Davi. By the backstabbing Pilates instructor.
That's right.
Yeah.
In a pre-Me Too era.
In a pre-Me Too storyline, yes. But also like maybe more, what do I want to say? Sympathetic to the male character instead of the female character.
It was. It honestly was. Because she came in as like this, oh no.
Yeah. She's gonna she's going to ruin everything. Yeah.
And he apologized to Michael, or like on an interview with Michael Riedel or something like that later. It was very bizarre. When you look back on that experience, what stands out to you? Like, what were like your big memories or takeaways?
Well, like when we first started shooting season two, it was like one of the best times of my entire life. Like we had so much fun, and it was Andy and Jeremy and I who had known each other peripherally but never like become friends.
Sure.
All of a sudden we're like best friends. Like we formed a core so quickly that was amazing. And Wes Taylor, who was already one of my best friends, was there. Kat and I knew each other from college.
Oh, wow.
So we were sort of reuniting at that point. And so for all of us to like, you know, in Savannah Wise, like there is a photo of us out eating lunch on like a sunny day in September in the studio, and we're like sunning outside, and it's just like young Broadway making their TV mark on the world. And it was just like, what's happening? This is amazing. And then, you know, it becomes the job and it gets a little harder. But like those moments of like solidifying my relationship with all of those people and how like, you know, what we've been through now together and marriages and, you know, cancer and TV shows and Jeremy becoming famous and like all of these things sort of like all happening and like, you know, being in each other's weddings. And like, it's just like a great... That's what really comes out of all of this stuff, regardless of where the TV shows go.
Oh, I love that so much.
Yeah.
That's like so cool to know that off screen you all were
friends too. Yeah. Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes was when you guys did This Will Be Our Year.
Yeah.
And like you just look, you guys were having a blast singing that song.
It's fun to be with them. Yeah.
Now we discovered on YouTube a version of I'm Not Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Between you and Kat that was cut from the show.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Ah,
is that just the nature of it? You know, sometimes things, because there is a version of that song, obviously, with.
Yeah.
I forget the character's name.
Daisy.
Parker? Yeah. Daisy Parker. Yeah. That was shot months after this one. So we shot I'm Not Sorry for episode 7, I think it was, or 8. It was something like that. It was going to be in that episode. And they, I mean, you see those costumes. Like they spent so much money on that.
And your
shoot,
makeup.
And the makeup and everything. I mean, it was like, you know, so much. And then I think it was somewhere around episode 10, they were like, I don't know. I don't know what happens behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You have to know there's like, 150 people who are making decisions and you don't even know. And the reason you're told the decisions are made are not always why they're being made.
Drama.
So we don't really know. There was some talk about how they didn't like some costume piece, so they scrapped it. There was
talk
that
they were
like,
because that was iconic.
Fierce.
Yeah.
But like I had to have people like sitting around me, like holding it up while I was in between takes and stuff. I couldn't move. People were having to like feed me and stuff.
And like, you were doing like
I was like trying to dance. Yeah, it was like crazy. So there was like, maybe they thought like the headpiece was obtrusive. Maybe they didn't like Kat's character's costume. Maybe the episode was too long. There was like all of these reasons why it got cut. And then they redid it again for Daisy to have that moment in episode 10 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
12.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just happened. Yeah. I know.
One last thing about Smash and then we can move on. What do you have a favorite scene that you filmed throughout that whole experience?
I'm trying to think back. I mean, I could say that it was like the silks, like hanging from the
silks. Oh my goodness.
Which is like fun to think back on, but that was terrifying. Like
it
was really terrifying and it was a long day. And it was like I cried a couple times the day before when like we did the rehearsal because it's like 30 feet in the air and there's like no net or anything. It's not like that was not TV magic. That was for real. Like I did the whole thing with nothing, no wires or nets or nothing. And it was during Hurricane Sandy. We had already shut production down for like 2 weeks because of Hurricane Sandy. And then they were like, okay, we're coming back tomorrow and we're doing this number.
Oh my God.
So it was like I had like an hour of rehearsal. I mean, it was like it was crazy, but it was cool that that exists. Like I'm glad that that happened. That was cool that existed. But I think it was like probably earlier on, I remember having moments of like shooting stuff. Jeremy and I had to sing like a love song together and we could not stop laughing. Like things like that stick out in my mind as like great experiences.
That's so cool. Well, thank you for your contributions as Anna.
Of course.
It is something that I think is even more popular now than when the show aired.
Yeah.
I know that's so true. Mm-hmm. Dawn. It is kind of,
it's way more popular now. I mean, it was right when it had ended, it was like maligned. I mean, people were so angry. There was a lot of hate coming at us all over the internet. And there was
insane.
Like, it was really, really like it was an isolating time. And for me who like, was in the community, I felt like I had to come back to the community and be like, is it okay if I come back? Like, you know, there was a bit of that. And I did First Date kind of immediately after that. And I remember doing the stage door and people being like, we loved Smash. And I'm like, what? Like, it was literally the first time anyone had ever said, like, we love this show. Mm. Now people say it constantly. Oh, my God, we loved Smash. We love blah, 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 blah. But, like, the way, I'll just say this really quickly and you can cut this out. Worries. Like, the way network TV was looking at how people were watching shows back then was changing and they didn't know it. Mm-hmm. So at that time, if, like, 6 million people were watching a show, it wasn't enough people to watch a show to keep it on network television. Now it's like if you put something on Netflix and 450,000 people watch it, they'll still make another one because there's so much TV. Instead of making one TV show that everyone likes, they're making one TV show per person in the world, basically.
Literally.
And so now to hear that, that's still a lot of people. Like if 8 million people watch Smash, that's more than have ever seen me on Broadway in my entire 15-year career.
Wow.
One episode.
Yeah.
So like you start to get lose sight of that. So when people start coming up to you from Iowa or Indiana or London or whatever and saying they love Smash, you're like, oh, right. You guys were out there too. Mm-hmm. I was just surrounded by 10 blocks of people who hated the show. Mm. So, you know, that happens.
Where is Anna now?
Oh, God, Anna. I don't know. Hopefully she's killing it. Like, hopefully she found, she went on the Once tour.
She did.
You know, yes. So maybe she got to come in and replace on Broadway. Yeah. Maybe she won a Broadway.com audience award.
Oh,
and
that.
Maybe she's like finally, you know, she's playing Trina
falsettos. Yeah.
Let's go with that.
Anna Vargas,
she's like finding her womanhood finally.
She won a Broadway.com audience award.
Yeah.
That might be the title of the episode. Yeah. So we kind of have to go back a little bit too, because you obviously had a bunch of incredible early Broadway experiences. Mm-hmm. You were in Spring Awakening mm-hmm. when it first came to Broadway, but then you got to revisit it with the Deaf West production.
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
Oh my God. It was so amazing. Like I can't believe it happened, to be honest. But I remember, this is a vivid memory that is for real. We were in tech for the original, and in the Mirror Blue Night, there was a moment where like all of these filament mm-hmm. blue light bulbs like descended from ceiling.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. And we were in thing and I started crying because I was like, this is so beautiful. I can't believe I'm like in something so beautiful. Also, like at the time, Times Era Changin' and High Fidelity had both closed within a week, and we were like, we have this crazy weird musical and like I will be so heartbroken if no one gets to see this, like if this doesn't get to be what people see, because it had changed my life. I saw it at the Atlantic and it changed my life. So the fact that I was in it already and like I wanted people so badly to see it and we had these beautiful blue light bulbs, I started crying. And then my next thought was, can I cuss on this?
Are we oh yeah oh my cuss? God yes.
Some fuck is going to want to revive this and it's going to suck. Like, I remember being mm-hmm. like, I don't want to see the revival of this. This is like someone is going to totally miss the point of this musical. And I felt that way for a long time and being like, they're going to put it in like in an insane asylum or something stupid. Uh-huh. Like this is going to be some dumb, weird version of this show and I'm going to be distraught. Because like it will close here and then people will be like, that found musical that didn't work. Mm. We're going to make it work. Like I had all of these like thoughts in my head. So it wasn't until like, it was like a couple years later, Andy had been like, hey, we're developing Spring Awakening with Deaf West. And I was like, that's it. Like I couldn't have believed there would be a way to do it. But I remember feeling like that's the only way. That's mm-hmm. the only way to do it. And then to have Andy involved, who had been on the tour, and Michael, who was genius and like had been in the Deaf West world already, I was like, this is going to be great. And I was just a sideline fan. And they did the Inner City Arts production in, you know, Skid Row in L.A. Okay. And I was like tweeting about it and telling everybody about it. There was no like idea I was ever going to be in it. And then I got this text from Andy being like, what's your chemo treatment schedule? Oh, wow. And I was like, okay, well, I'm this and I'm that. And like, I could do it every 3 weeks. And then my last one's on April 24th or something. And then I have my surgery on, I think it was like April 10th or something. And my surgery was on June 24th or something. And he was like, okay, do you want to play Ilsa in the Deaf West Spring Awakening? And I was like, what? I mean, but what? Like, it'd be like if someone was like, do you want to play Annie right now? You're just like, it's not coming back. That thing's never coming back. And he was like, because our first rehearsal is April like 14th and our last performance is June 23rd. It was literally like the last day of chemo and the first the end of the show before my surgery. Yeah. It was the exact 6 week period.
Oh my goodness.
And he was like, do you think you can do it? And I'm like, I think so. He's like, we can make you videos. You can just work with your hands while you're like learning signs.
Oh my God.
But basically was like, we can't teach someone sign language and the show. We need someone. And it's just another, like what Andy calls like the victory lap. Like we just did another production in LA. It wasn't supposed to go to Broadway, you know? And so I was like, that's amazing. And then he was like, texted me later. He was like, I think Alex Wise is going to have to do it because we lost our Georg. Yeah. And then I was like, oh my God, Alex. Like, I've never worked with Alex. That'll be fun. And then he was like, so it turns out I'm also going to be playing Hanshin now. I mean, it was like a slow, just like this weird ass production that we were all putting together of like, just the island of misfit toys. I mean, it was like anyone who could do it, and I'm have cancer, and Allie's in a wheelchair, and the half the cast is deaf, and like it was just like, should we put on a musical? Let's do it. And like it ended up being unreal, like an unreal experience. It quite literally saved my life. Aww. It gave me like purpose again, and I remember being in the first day of rehearsal, and Spencer Liff, who's like an amazing choreographer but also like a fitness guru, he would make us do a warm-up every day because he was dealing with people who hadn't really done musicals sometimes before, so he wanted to make sure everyone was safe and like whatever. So we did this intense like major workout every day. I am like body aches. I have no hair. I'm like pale. And I'm like, I'm not doing this warm up. Like, I have the best excuse ever. And I look over, and Allie Stroker is doing tricep dips on her wheelchair. And I was like, damn it.
God damn it.
I'm like, these deaf kids are doing a musical too. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to do the warm up. And it just brought us all to be like, we're all at a deficit somehow in that we haven't done what we are about to do, which meant no one was better on top of anything. Even if I knew the musical, I didn't know sign language, and I'm doing chemo, you know, like so there was all these sorts of ways that we, a great equalizer again, we all had to come together and do something we had never done before, and it was a beautiful thing. And then like I'm literally recovering from my double mastectomy like on drugs, and I get a call, and they're like, you think you can make it to Broadway? And I was like, let me see what I can do. And like I had to like move everything. We just moved into, because I was doing all my treatments in LA, and I had to get a doctor to do radiation in New York. So I was like doing radiation during rehearsal, and like in here it was like all of this like crazy. I was like, let's just make it happen. And I mean, I can't imagine any 15 to 23 year old playing Ilsa. Like it took all of that experience that I had gone through to like dig into what she had been through. And it was really beautiful to be able to give that opportunity, all that I know now and what I knew about the show and who I loved about that character already, and like put that in there was something you don't get ever. So it was really special.
And you turned out a beautiful performer.
Thank
you. We drove up on our fall break of our senior year of college.
Yeah.
So excited. And, you know, I studied, maybe you don't know, studied American Sign Language my like foreign language.
Amazing.
In college.
Yeah.
So it was so thrilling to get to go and see you guys do it.
Yeah.
I mean, and Spring Awakening was so impactful for us growing up. It was one of those first musicals that it was like, this is, I see people who are similar to my
age. Like when you saw Annie.
Right, exactly. And doing things that are interesting. They're not just like bitching about boys or whatever. Like it's like life or death stuff happening that you don't always get entrusted with at that age, you know?
Oh, 100%.
Yes. So.
And correct me if I'm wrong, were you one of the few actors that both voiced your role and signed it?
Yes.
Yes.
I was a SimCom actor. Yeah. Okay. So there was only like maybe two or three of us. Either people were just voices or just signed. Yeah. Which was, not to say it was hard or anything, but it was difficult. Like it was hard because it was easier when I didn't know what I was signing because it was choreography almost. Okay. I could fit it with the words that I was saying. Once I knew what I was saying with my hands, you're speaking two languages at the same time. And it's like, it's so weird. The syntax is totally different. It's not a word for word translation. Right, ASL is not. Mm-hmm. So it's like, my final line was, by the time you finally wake up, I'll be lying on some trash heap. And my signs are like, understand, moment I'm falling over, trash, you understand, you wake up, moment I'm falling over trash.
Krista like, that's is signing sort of like right now. I'm for those of you
live on the podcast,
her recall is incredible.
So it's like you're like, oh god, and that makes sense to someone in their syntax language, but like to me, I'm going like, you know, understand. By the time you wake up, trash finally on the trash heap, like and act at the same time.
It's like two things kind of butting heads,
and sometimes it enhances it even better. Mm-hmm. Like there's a part I can't tell about the dark I know well. There is no repetition in sign language. There's no reason to repeat a sign over and over again because there isn't different inflections necessarily. Mm-hmm. So we had to come up, came up with four different ways that we were saying. So it was up, there is a part I can't speak about the dark in my soul. There's a part I keep secret about the dark in my life. Oh, wow. There is a part I'm holding. There's a part I push down about, you know, so it's like we got to sing those four lines entirely differently, you know, than you would say. So it did a lot of work for you and then sometimes did some work against you.
That is so wild.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
That's incredible. And I, you know, I will say this. I don't know how you feel about awards, but you were snubbed for a Tony nomination 100%. That year. Because
scene after Don't Just Add This Blue Wind, which...
Well, we got one for the show.
Yes,
but we all were. I mean, for the show, it would have been open. Mm-hmm. I hope that so many people in our show would have gotten Austin. And Sandra is one of the best actresses I've ever worked with.
Unbelievable.
She's in Daybreak, guys, by the way.
A reunion.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
She had a cool part in Daybreak. So we got to work together in Albuquerque.
Oh, that's so cool.
Did you feel that your ASL was still kind of fresh when you would interact with her again?
Oh, God, it was hard. I got nervous because I had sort of like... been the kids in the show had known that I had done the thing. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like, oh, they're gonna know my sign language is not very good. Like they think I'm a great signer. And but it was some of it was like riding a bike and other parts of it you're like, oh my God, I don't know any of this again. And totally forgetting words that I should know. It's just, you know. But they're all so patient. They want to talk to you, you know? I always feel like, oh, you don't want to teach me sign language. But they're like, no, try. We'll fix it. You know? So
I love it.
Yeah.
So cool. That was a beautiful production. And the original Broadway company of Spring Awakening too.
Yeah.
We watched this behind the scenes. It was Jonathan.
Oh my
Rock
God. The vlog. Like I know. Isn't that classic?
And you're in there and you had like
written quotes on the mirror.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
yeah.
So funny.
Me and Lily and Jen forever. Damiano and Remy Zakin all shared a dressing room together. And those kids were 15.
That's wild.
Jen was 15. Lily was 16. Remy was 17. And I was 22.
Speaking of Broadway debuts
for
both Spring Awakening productions.
Yeah.
Did the original one have more Broadway debuts? Had any of
I'm sure
done?
I had. She I had won you. The Gypsy Robe.
Yeah.
Which the Legacy Robe
the
now.
Legacy Robe,
yeah. Yeah. For being me and... Gerard had done the 25th anniversary of what's it called? Les Mis.
Oh, okay.
Oh. It was like a one night only on Broadway thing.
Okay.
So he technically had also had a Broadway show, but it was not like a real thing. And plus he would have been on a principal contract. So, okay. And Jonathan Groff had done In My Life.
Oh, okay.
The very short lived weird musical. And Leah obviously had been in like a million Broadway shows at that point. She had been in Fiddler, Les Mis, and Ragtime.
Oh, okay, wow.
So she was sort of the veteran. But as far as what the requirements for the Legacy Robe were your most ensemble contracts, and you were in the ensemble. So I was in the ensemble through Awakening and had been in a swing in Good Vibrations. So
yes,
I got that.
Amazing.
Yeah, but other than that, all the other kids were, debuts.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Did you feel like they would look to you in that dressing room for like advice, or were they all kind of
I would love to say that. I think that they would think that. I mean, I think in that time we were all very equal, you know, but
the great equalizer.
The great equalizer, right. But I remember like getting into like philosophical conversations with Gideon about like Broadway and stuff like that, or like things where I had kind of been through. I had also been through it in a show that was troubled.
Yes.
And it was in the same theater. It was at the O'Neill.
Okay.
And it was like 2 years before, almost identical to the day. And so I was just being like, you guys have no idea what this could be like and what it is. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm glad that I had that perspective. Not to say that they took that for granted, but I do think that there was moments where they didn't know what was going to happen next, and I had a bit more insight into that. But
Was the show, because it was grew up in Cleveland, and so we watched it from afar, but was it a huge smash right after opening up until the Tonys?
No.
Or was it sort of like a quiet
when it first came out? It was like exciting. Mm-hmm. People had loved it at the Atlantic. So in previews, usually you end up with a bunch of New York audiences anyway. Right. So people were very buzzy about it. And then it kind of dipped a little bit. We opened. We got like the best reviews of the season.
Yes, beautiful
that
times.
That bumped
review.
Everything up again. We got to put all the pull quotes up front. And then, you know, it's just like the young kids are a draw, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there was some opportunities of that. And then it petered off pretty hard. Like we were selling at like 50% capacity before the Tonys.
Wow.
And the night before the Tonys, we had like a huge audience because it was like all the celebrities were in from the Tonys.
Sure.
And so like we had like Idina Menzel and Taye Diggs and Liev Schreiber and like all of these people on the same night. And
so
it was
what?
Like this big thing. And then the Tonys happened and then we won 8 Tonys.
Yes.
And then from then on, it like boomed and the show was a huge success and like selling out every night and like the big juggernaut show, which we didn't expect to happen. But then I left the show a month after the Tonys.
Okay.
So I
remember that you left.
Yeah. Season. I was mostly in the like getting people to see the show phase of like handing out flyers ourselves kind of thing. That was the part where I was in. But yeah, I got to watch all everyone else.
I remember seeing you on the Tony. Weren't you in a yellow dress?
Yeah, like a chartreuse,
yes.
Like urine colored dress.
I remember that because they put on it.
They let all the swings
do
it. I was a chair of rock. Yes.
Yeah, chair of rock. Yeah.
Me and Gerard, Jen, and this other guy, Robbie Hiker. We were the chair of rock, and they let us perform the Tonys. Also, Matt Doyle had just joined as an offstage swing kind of standby for Melchior and other roles, and they let him perform as well. So it was really special. And they also, which has never, I've never experienced this before ever, the producers paid for all of us to sit at the Tony Awards as well.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. Because it was so many people's first experiences.
Yeah.
So we all got to walk the red carpet and sit at the awards and watch all of our friends win and all the show win. And then they came and got us to perform. And then we got to like party. I remember crying on the sidewalk at the party because it was like 11 p.m. and I was like, I'm so tired and all I want to do is party all night long, but I'm so tired. You're up at like 6 a.m. and then you do rehearsal, then you do your you do a matinee, then you go back and do like camera blocking, then you're there and there's the winning and the thing, and it's like it's crazy.
Oh,
but it's so exhausting.
Where was that opening night party?
It was right on it used to be called Spotlight. It's on Broadway next to where the new Juniors is sort of area. It's like across from the Crown Plaza.
Yeah
It's like an event space. It's like a 4-story event space, and it's like been a million different things since then.
I think it's like a gentleman's, or it might be a gentleman's.
It's not a gentleman. I think it's like it was like a country music venue.
Oh, I remember when it was that.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is now, but yeah, it was there. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
I could talk about Spring Awakening forever.
I know.
So we need to probably move on. And then a little while later, you originated Wednesday Addams and the Addams Family,
mm-hmm.
and that was like. Would you say that's what people know you most from?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, definitely.
And that was at the Lunt Fontaine.
Yeah, that was
right?
at the Lunt. Yeah.
What was that experience like? Because it was like all these big, like, I mean, Nathan Lane, Baby Newhart.
It was my first time originating something that was for a very long time. Like, I was in the first reading of it. I was in the ensemble, but I was in the first reading of it.
Interesting.
And then, like, worked my way through and finally got the part and did a couple more readings of it, The Out of Town, and then the opening on Broadway. And the year of that. So, you know, with Spring Awakening and In the Heights and Chorus Line, I had jumped in right as it was moving to Broadway or a replacement in the case of Chorus Line. And with Good Vibrations, I had originated it and done like the Out of Town, but it was very short lived.
Okay. Yeah.
So this was the first time I was like from the ground up building something. So that part's really cool. That's the part that I love. And like people are always coming up to me, my friends who are like, I was judging this like school competition and like I hear pulled 450 times and like you've ruined that song for them because it's because of your weird ass voice. Like,
oh my God.
I have a weird ass voice that like sits in a mix that's normally on someone's break, you know? And so they wrote this song for me that sits right where, I mean, I never missed a show for like a vocal, nothing. I could sing that song through everything.
Oh,
I had like
goodness.
Bronchitis. I could sing that song because it put me right in where like my healthiest, safest thing is. But to literally every other person in the world, besides the other women who played it, you know, in the shows, it's like, do I mix this? Do I melt this? Like, it's just so weird. So that it's it's funny to watch that sort of go on. And but yeah, it's, but the point is, like, it's awesome to have a song built for you.
Yeah.
I apologize to everyone else who sings it now, but to have it built.
That's my
for
favorite
you.
Song in the show.
Oh yeah, it's yeah. the star. I remember hearing it for the first time and being like, oh my God, this is it. This is it. I was like, this is going to be the Michigan song forever.
Oh,
like,
my God.
This showcase Michigan mm-hmm. song. And, like, little did I know it was going to be beyond that. Like, I sort of knew, but.
And you have, like, signature songs through yeah. for a lot of different things, which you did in that amazing medley, the Please
yes.
Don't Leave
After yes. This so Medley. Yes, Please Don't Leave After This Medley.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's funny because, like, my fans, I guess.
Yes, your fans.
They grew up with me. So mm-hmm. while Pulled was the song that defined them in their early 20s, Safer is the song that defines them in their mm-hmm. late 20s, early 30s.
Oh,
like,
that's so cool.
Where did I get to, you know? So they kind of grew up with me as well. And so those songs start to become a little more iconic to people as well. And yeah, there's so many. And Blue Hair, which is Joey Conis's like first viral hit that happened in like 2007, even before that, 2005 probably. You know, I was the first one to do that too. So it's like I get to have a lot of those cult classic songs, which
that's
is cool.
So neat.
Yeah.
Now I have to ask about In the Heights.
Yeah.
One of my favorite musicals of all time.
Yeah. Cool.
I loved it. Did you get to go on in the different roles
all the time?
That you were studied for?
Yes.
Covered? Yeah.
Yes.
All the time. All
the time. This is the problem with Broadway. It's like one person gets sick and then three other people get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And you're usually sharing a dressing room with those other people because that's they're the same kind of category, mm-hmm. which means I cover all of them, which means if one gets sick, they knock the whole dressing room out. And then I'm on, you know. So, yeah, there was like a period of time where I did week long. Like I went on for Karen for a whole week, and then the next week went on for Mandy for a whole week, and then the next week would go on for Janet for a whole week. Also, Janet covered Mandy as okay. well and Karen. So,
oh, I remember that.
So, okay. if she went on, I went on for her.
Okay.
So, I was always on in whatever scenario. If there was a woman down, I was in.
Wow. So, she does it all?
Yeah. Listeners. And my track in the show as the ensemble was designed to dissolve, like the dissolvable track was designed to be able to do the show without it, so that if I was on, they wouldn't have to change too many lifts. There was like contingency plans where they're like, okay, Chris's track is gone, don't do this lift, or you're a partner with this person.
I've never heard of anything like that yeah. before.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. So
who was your favorite to go on for?
I think Nina, which was a big surprise, actually.
I could see. I was like, I thought you were going to say Vanessa.
I know. Yeah. I did Vanessa first.
Okay.
And I had a great time doing it. But like, it was, well, Karen is such, I mean, they both are, but Karen specifically in that character is so, such a beast of like a sing
mm-hmm.
and just commanding the stage so much that if it's not your part, it's hard to get that command.
Sure.
It's hard to like feel comfortable enough to like kick the door down and walk out in that big entrance moment.
Yeah.
And not to say that Nina isn't that, she commands the more emotional core yes. of the show in some ways. So it sometimes felt more close to home to be like, I can really just sit here and think about how I feel about these things and create connections with my parents and like
yeah.
Usnavi in these moments, these beautiful Sunny, these moments where I get to have these like gorgeous, like human moments to them, whereas Vanessa has to be a little bit more on edge
yes.
a lot and not let it in till the end. So sometimes it felt nice to play Nina. And I was shocked because when I did it, I was like, whoa, I like that
yes.
more than I thought I was going to.
So, oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
That's so
it.
Great. I remember, Connor, you discovered In the Heights and you wouldn't let me listen to anything in Act Two.
Yeah.
Because we have this thing where we like to go in cold.
Yeah, with sure,
shows.
Sure.
He's like, you can listen to 96,000.
Yeah.
You can listen to all these, but please do not listen to anything in Act Two. Because, you know,
yeah, big spoilers.
The deaths and
yes.
things like that, the
yes.
death that happens in the second
yes.
act. But
well, I think that's one of the most beautiful shows ever.
Yeah, it's a great show.
Breathe, Nina's song.
I know.
It's just.
I feel so sad. Sometimes it gets swept under the rug, under the Hamilton.
It does.
I know.
It does.
The Hamilton. What do I want to call it? The
hurricane.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's the Hamilton reference.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Steamrollers, the word I was looking for. Yeah. But like, you know, it's like, oh my God, Lin changed the form of musical theater. I'm like, I know. Yeah. 8 years before that.
Yes, he did. No, that's the thing.
You know, like I was there. I saw it.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want more credit where it was due earlier, you know?
Were you a part of that from like workshops onwards?
No.
Or okay.
They did the inner city arts. What is it? 37 Arts.
Oh, yes.
Was what the Brishnikov Studio used to be called. And they did the Off-Broadway and I saw it there. And then I actually had final callbacks to be in that production, but I got Spring Awakening on Broadway first.
Okay.
So I did that. And then by the time I had done Spring Awakening and done Coraline, In the Heights had come back around and I was like, any spot for me? And they were like, well, if you audition for it. And I did and I got it.
Anita.
I did
recently,
play Anita at the Kennedy Center.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Which is so cool.
Yeah. Which was amazing with Soleil Pfeiffer.
Oh, she's great.
She was the, yeah. And, Corey Cott and Ephraim Sykes.
Oh, Corey
was a great
one of our Cleveland. Yeah, yeah, remember, yeah. We remember seeing him coming up through the Cleveland theater scene.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden it was like,
it was
great. He's a leading man on Broadway.
It was a great cast. We had fun. It
you
was
know what I could see
thing.
You in?
Tell me.
I could see you playing Bobby in Company.
Oh well.
Yes.
I mean, that's what I. The Katrina Lank track, whatever it is, yeah. I would love to do it. She plays the best roles.
She does.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited to see that. It was funny to see now this like gender bend version of it, mm-hmm. to realize that like actually all the women have the good songs.
They do. And I think that's my biggest.
We're a little.
Yeah.
I think the role of Bobby and the idea of it does fit better
totally.
As a woman.
Totally.
But there are great female roles in Company.
Totally.
That are
female
all...
voices.
I know. Because like there was like they had approached me to audition for something and I was like, oh, for, nope, that's a man. Yeah. Oh, for the, nope, that's a man. I'm like, wait.
What's left?
We're losing all the good female parts. And you don't realize what a good show it is for women until you're, you take them away.
Yeah. It's going to be great. And I was actually talking to a friend about this. Is like, this isn't the last production of Company we're ever going to see.
No, yeah.
It's just, this is a nice chance to see it a little bit differently. We're going to see it again.
Right.
It's one of those things.
Right.
So
right.
I'm excited. And Matt Doyle is going to be amazing.
Yeah, he is.
Is
yeah.
Jamie.
He is Jamie. Yeah.
Yes. That's so great.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're kind of wrapping up on time.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Daybreak really
okay,
quick.
Great. Yes, please.
We have questions, Miss Crumble.
The name, first of all, the most iconic character name in the world.
You get a little origin story in the first episode.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Are so you in good. All
yep.
all the episodes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that photo they released of you was so iconic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So can you give a quick plot
synopsis
of Daybreak?
So Daybreak is a mixture of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Mad Max, Zombieland, and Lord of the Flies. It's
awesome.
Like a comedy about the apocalypse, and basically at its core it's about how this a nuclear bomb goes off. It's like a biological warfare, so it turns all of the adults over 18 into ghoulies, which are basically like zombies.
Okay.
And all the kids under 18 survive, and they basically default to their high school tribes, like their high school clubs,
okay.
and turn them into tribes to survive in the apocalypse.
This is so clever.
Yeah, it's really smart. And so there's like the Cheermazon tribe, there's the Turbo Bro Jocks, there's the 4-H club, there's the Disciples of Kardashia, there's all of these different clubs that become like the golf club, but they're all on steroids basically. Okay. They're all just like, you know, they have golf clubs with like spikes on them and like a motorized golf cart that like kills people.
Very
like they're
Mad
basic
Max.
Yeah, it's super Mad Max in that way. And Miss Crumble was the biology teacher who for some reason you find out later on did not fully turn into a ghoulie. So she's half ghoulie, half human.
Oh,
she's one of the only adults left in the world that can still string together like a sentence even if it's a little bit crazy.
Wow.
So she becomes a bit like the sloth from the Goonies, if you know the reference.
Oh yeah.
She's the gentle giant who joins the kids in their quest for like world saving.
How neat.
Yeah. But the show is very funny and it's sharp and every episode is told in a different genre.
Oh,
so it's like something for everybody. Like the first two episodes are a Ferris Bueller like knockoff as far as like direct address to the camera and a bit like the fun, like this is how fun the apocalypse is. And then the third episode is a Goodfellas like homage.
Great.
There's a samurai film like episode where everything's told in like Japanese samurai blocks. There's one that's entirely in subtitles. There's one that I get to do that is my Miss Crumble, the Witches episode is a cross between a sitcom and All That Jazz. Wow. So there's like all kinds. It's something for everybody.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
So are they 30-minute episodes? Like, do you know how long?
No, they're hour-ish, but okay, because cool. of streaming, some of them are like 48 minutes. Okay, some of them are 50-something minutes. But yeah. So it's really cool. It's an amazing world that they built, and it's really fun, and I had a great time doing it. And talk about wanting to get dirty in my career. Mm-hmm. I'm getting figuratively and literally very dirty as the witch. I smear bug guts all over my face. I eat fingers and maggots and pillow stuffing, and it's fun.
I think that it sounds like an interesting concept, too, with this age of, you know, streaming and binge watching.
Yeah.
Oftentimes I'll binge something and it'll be over and I can't remember specific episodes.
Right.
But I think
this
like
could
Daybreak,
help. Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, yeah, that was the.
That was so-and-so's episode. Yeah. It's like each character gets their own telling of what's going on. So that's you get to know the characters better.
Was it told as a complete story, or do you think there could be like a possibility for an.
Oh, yeah, no, there's more. Yeah, okay, we hope that there's another season. We have to wait to see how people watch it.
So back to Albuquerque.
Uh-huh, yeah, we'll be back in Albuquerque, but we'll see.
So is one part, another part of drama is talking about relationships within the business.
Yeah.
And you have a wonderful boyfriend.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
What is his name again?
His name's Peter. He is not in the musical business.
Okay.
And he's not an actor. He's a director and a director of photography.
Amazing.
So he films movies and he, does amazing other things, and yeah, it's great.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Did he come out to Albuquerque while you were there?
He came to visit a couple times.
Okay.
He has to work where he has to work too.
Sure.
But he came out a couple times to visit. We went on a hot air balloon ride over Christmas.
Goodness.
And it's the number one hot air balloon destination. Albuquerque, New Mexico.
All I know about Albuquerque is that it's where the High School Musical series took place.
Yes.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And Breaking Bad.
Okay.
Breaking Bad's also Albuquerque.
It's the new hot spot.
Yeah. Well, it's cheap to film there.
Okay.
Netflix owns the studios there now.
Okay.
So like El Camino, the new Breaking Bad movie, was shot entirely there.
Okay.
And like while we were there, Tom Hanks was shooting a movie out there. It's the place to go. Also like the place to go if you want a post-apocalyptic show, because
obviously
there's nothing there.
So. I think of like The Hills Have Eyes or something that being out there.
Because it's the story of Daybreak take place in Glendale, California.
Okay.
So when I saw it, I was like, oh, great. We're going to go to LA. And they're like, no, post-apocalyptic. Apocalyptic Glendale, which is Albuquerque.
Wow.
Great. So
So we're wrapping up here.
Okay.
And we like to end our show with a little dose of drama. So
okay.
This is a chance to end on a dramatic note. And we like to share the drama in our hearts, whether it be, I don't know, a show that you're going to see or maybe that you've already seen, any content you're consuming, whether that be music, film, TV, maybe a date or a lover that you're moodily reflecting on. Are you feeling dramatic today? And I think I'm going to kick this off with my dose of drama, which is that I've got some drama in that Krista had the chance to be in a TV show with someone that I've been obsessed with for years, and she got to kiss him on this TV show. This was on Gossip Girl. She got to kiss Nate Archibald.
Yeah, Chase
in
Crawford.
A season two episode. Which, you know, he was one of my first crushes as a young gay man.
Sure.
I am still jealous that you got to do this. And I'm feeling a little dramatic that it wasn't me that got to do that.
Let me tell you, it's one of the first questions I've gotten in my career since then.
Really?
The day that it aired, it was my first TV job ever. And I was walking, I was going to see Legally Blonde.
Fun.
And I was walking to the theater and I heard... like someone come running up behind me, and I was like scared. I'm in Times Square. I'm like, who's about to tackle me? And it is like a 65-year-old woman, and she's like, oh my God, you got to make out with Chase Crawford. What was that like? Uh-huh. And I was like, oh my God, literally this aired last night, and like already this woman is chasing me down the street, and she's 65. Like,
oh my God.
What?
Well, so,
like,
you know,
the way that it, but what's great, like little tidbit, is that, when I went into my audition for Smash, Josh Safran, who has now been like a friend of mine, was like, oh, I know you. I wrote your episode of Gossip Girl.
Yes.
And I was like, well, thanks for that makeout scene then. Appreciate it. You're the one I should shake your hand then. And now he's been like, you know, responsible for like 6 out of the 10 jobs on TV I've ever had. So
he's a genius.
Yeah. But Chase was very sweet. It was very nice. We had a good time. But but people will discover that now that it's streaming. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, my God,
it found a new life once it was streaming.
And totally.
It's coming back. They're doing it.
Coming back with Josh Safran.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. He's doing it. Yeah. So maybe I'll get to make out with Chase again.
Oh, maybe.
I want to come with you.
Okay.
Dylan, do you have a dose of drama?
My drama is something fun and positive, but it also kind of ties into Krista.
Okay.
So we mentioned the Addams Family earlier, mm-hmm. and my boyfriend is currently Gomez in his college production.
Oh, how fun.
Yes. And it opens on Halloween night, but it'll be, by the time this airs, I will then be going to see him in
Where is it?
It's at Wright State in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay, yeah, cool.
And I'm just so excited to see him. It'll be about like over a month since I've seen him, and he's currently in Techland. But
oh my God, I know.
I am so excited to see. I've never seen a production. I've only heard some of the music.
It took me a long time to see a production. I saw it maybe like 3 or 4 years after I'd done
it. And it's changed. He explained to me that they changed it and it's not the same thing.
It's not, Yeah.
So I'm excited. And it's kind of just surreal to be sitting here with you. And he's like, you know, people like will sometimes play the cast album if we're like running choreography or something.
Yeah, sure.
Like, and you like know Krista. And I was like, it is pretty surreal. It's pretty crazy. So that's my drama.
I have a friend who lives in Florida now. She was a Broadway star in her own right. And her daughter now is did the Addams Family. She's like 7 or something.
Wow.
And she was like playing pulled in the other room. And she was like, why are you playing this? She's like, oh, we're doing Addams Family. And she's like, you know, that's Krista. And she was like, no, like she couldn't put it together that
that's so cute.
Yeah. So anyway, that's fun. It's fun to be that type of person.
Do you have a little dose of drama for us today, Krista?
Dose of drama. Well, we're about to go do a student matinee.
Oh my goodness.
For Seared. I'm about to go do a student matinee for Seared. And interestingly enough, the last time we did a student matinee, I got a lot of pushback from the audience about Emily. A lot of pushback from these young women. And I kind of had to call one out. We did like a talk back afterwards.
Really?
She was like, you are so annoying. And I was like, tell me what I did wrong. And she was like, I'm like, tell me what I did.
Yeah, good.
Well, okay. And what about when that?
Yeah.
Does he have a new, does I have a that? Did the thing this? Did this happen the way I said it was going to happen? You know? So I'm interested to see how this is now a group of culinary students, actually, which is totally on brand for the show.
Oh, very much.
We'll see if they recognize these characters in their life. But like it sort of got to me that like a young woman wouldn't fight for Emily and for like these type of women in the world. So I hope that, you know, maybe she's thinking about it a little bit more.
Yes.
I'm going to get to the kids. I'm going to help
That's
to get
value
to the kids.
Those talkbacks too.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I was going to say is like Emily keeps her cool throughout pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah, until the end.
Where you have, the end. Whereas you have Raul Esparza's character. Remind me of his name again.
Harry.
He didn't stop yelling at people. Like, he was so mean at times.
The first thing he says to me is like, you want me to consult with some girl?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, and because I just keep going, all of a sudden they're like, oh, she's so annoying. I'm like, he tried to kick me out of a job I was hired for. We all have to advocate for our own characters.
Yes.
So I obviously am going to feel like Emily should be, you know, put on a pedestal. But I just find it interesting when young women are not seeing that side of, not taking that extra step, like I said, you guys had done. So we'll see how we have another talk back today. We'll see how this group does. So
Fingers crossed.
And watch Daybreak.
Yes, watch Daybreak.
Oh my God, Krista, thank you so much for being here.
It means the whole world to
thanks
us.
Thanks for letting me talk for so long.
No, we loved it. So for anyone who is tuning in for the first time, follow Drama at The Drama Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. And I am at Dylan McDowell everywhere.
And I am at Connor McDowell everywhere. And be sure to follow Krista. And all right, Dylan, until next time.
Until next time. Drama.